This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, most interesting show. Sit tight. Background. The Arizona Senate has 17 Republicans and 13 Democrats. Generally, that means the Republicans can do whatever they want, unless two or more Republican senators object. Our guests are the two Republican senators who history has shown are most likely to do just that, Senator Kate Brophy McGee from North Central Phoenix and Paradise Valley, and Senator Bob Worsley from Mesa. Welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
Thank you, Mike.
Do they ever call you Rhino?
Occasionally. I like governing conservatives myself.
I like common sense Republican.
That's what you say, but what do they say? Or do they see it?
Rhino's probably the most derogatory.
Well,
or moderate.
Yeah, moderate. Yeah, that's why did moderate become a dirty word?
I don't think that it is.
It's in your caucus?
Maybe in my caucus. I know my district expects moderation and pragmatism and common sense. Mm-hmm. Bob's is a little different.
Harder in my district. Yeah. Moderate is more of a dirty word.
Okay, well, I want to start out first segment on education. Obviously, it's been the dominant issue in this legislative session and percolating in the state really for some time. We're all aware of what the teachers did. We've had numerous teachers and people involved in that on this show. Essentially, they wanted a little more money for education. That got translated as teacher raise, though their objectives were really broader than that. And the solution, the governor said, no new taxes, period. And at the last minute, he found, in effect, a few buckets of leftover money on a one-time basis and funded this year's increase in education with that. I think that's a fair statement of what was done. There was a surplus in the general fund. There was a little bit of unspent money in Medicaid. The teachers' concern is that it doesn't look to them like there's any continuing revenue stream, and it's kind of hope and a prayer after that.
Well, can I comment on that?
Absolutely.
There's actually a little known fact that happened there, and Kate and I kind of threw a mechanism in place that actually funded over two-thirds of the teacher raise over the next 3 years.
And that was what?
We got a $25 fee on all vehicles that the governor's ADOT director could set, which actually freed up $380 million over the next 3 years of the $500 we gave to the teachers.
And that's two-thirds of the total amount required to get the 20.
Now, yes.
And interestingly, there was some sleight of hand. They don't call that a tax.
It's a user fee.
Oh, when I do it, it's a user fee. When you do it, it's a tax. Is that the game?
Well, we've always argued, and I've been trying to get this done with Kate for a couple of years. We have Highway Patrol that's out there patrolling the roads. And when things got tough, we took the money out of road, the 18-cent road fees, the Highway User Fund, and we started paying for personnel to patrol the roads. And that took away from paving and service that should be done.
Well, I mean, I could extend that. By that same logic, is not a gas tax really a user fee? Because the people who pay, you pay for that in proportion to the amount you use the roads.
It is. It is. And I think we'll address that at some point soon.
Yeah, we haven't touched that tax in what,
1991.
91. And it's not a percentage, right? It's a flat. In effect, the tax has really been cut every year since 91.
It's the worst thing we've ever done because we've got better mileage on our cars. Mm-hmm. I drive electric car. The electric cars and the alternative fuel vehicles didn't pay anything. They never pull up to a gas pump. So you got zero from people using the roads in some cases, and almost everybody gets more mileage. So you're driving and using the roads more.
So the fees – so basically the available revenues for road repairs are guaranteed to go down.
It's billions we've lost.
So let me – Senator McGee, if what would you like to – given this is what's done this time, what would you like to see in the next session?
Well, I wanted to go back and add a little piece to Senator Worsley's mm-hmm. observations. The budget that we adopted had revised and projected revenues that were actually higher. So I'm going back to your one-time comment. Mm-hmm. So we are assuming a 6% growth this year, a 4%, a 4%, a 4.5% next year. So there is, at this point, ongoing revenue to support the remainder of the budget request. Whether or not that is sustained is one question, and it's a fair question. The other issue is that by devoting as much money as we have poured into K-12, there's nothing left for any other priorities that may come up in the ensuing years unless we do something more.
Do something more sounds like revenues.
Revenues, correct.
I mean, in effect, you're saying this is a sponge. You're saying we can do this, but it's a sponge that sucked up every last dollar.
Yes.
Every last dollar.
Now, that sounds like heresy in a Republican caucus. Call it a user fee. Call it I look at what happened with the registration fee, and you call it a user fee. But you know what? In the bottom line, it's only $25 for your car. So it's not seen as I think most people would say that's not a big deal one way or the other.
I would say that part of governing is figuring out how to pay for things. You need to understand that at the state level, when we mandate and to counties and to schools that they do things, we are also, I believe, responsible for paying for it. The other issue has to do with our propensity to cut taxes but not identify the service that we're going to do without. We have basic obligations as a state. We have to educate, medicate, and incarcerate. And until we figure out what those essentials cost, I think we need to approach tax cuts with as much care as we approach tax increases.
What I always hear about tax cuts is, oh, they pay for themselves because we get economic growth. Does anybody really still believe that anymore? Or is that just a convenient argument?
Well, I think Kansas proved that it did not. And I think it's suspect. It feels good to give everybody a tax cut, but
you're not going to get angry crowds over a tax cut.
Right.
I just think there has to be a look back. When I vote to cut taxes and let people keep more of their money, I do so with the understanding that it's going to boost economic activity, it's going to create jobs, and it's going to grow the general fund. So I want to look at our tax policies and say, are we doing that? The revival of Arizona's economy that we've seen, finally coming out of the Great Recession with this growth, is potentially indicative that that's what's happening. But we need more empirical evidence.
You know, there's an asymmetry based on Arizona law about taxes. So you get a bare majority to cut something. That's always feel good. But requirement is a 2/3 or 3/4, some completely unattainable level to ever increase anything. So if you get a momentary belief that we ought to cut something, that's all cuts are permanent. I mean, isn't that a structural problem?
That goes back to the point I was making. We put a lot of guardrails around increasing taxes. We need to put that same level of effort and analysis around cuts in taxes. Because right now we get to do it, transfer an unfunded mandate to levels of government that actually run things and tell them they have to figure out a way to pay for it. It's you can't have it both ways. But I will tell you another thing we did this year was we legislatively extended Prop 301. It was unheard of. It is a tool in our legislative toolbox that, to my knowledge, and your VLT bill, Senator Worsley's VLT bill, has never been deployed.
301, just so people know, was the sales taxes originally voted in by the people, I think it was 0.6%,
yes,
for education. And basically, 2 years from now, we were looking at
2021.
It doesn't increase anything, but it keeps a collapse two years out.
And schools are utilizing generally accepted accounting principles and saying it's not going to be here. There's no indication it will be. They were phasing it out of their operations. Mm-hmm. And now all that money has gone back into play and into ongoing expenditures. For example, teacher salaries. Madison District in my district gave a $500,000 increase to teachers. as a result of that.
We'll be back with Senator Kate Brophy McGee and Senator Bob Worsley in the Think Tank in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back with Senator Kate Brophy McGee and Senator Bob Worsley, and we're discussing education. We might as well continue that subject, only move off of funding per se. There are a couple of recent developments in the area of education. We have a superintendent of public instruction who basically said that she's toying with the idea of removing evolution from the science curriculum and or adding in creationism. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I could go back to explaining what the role of the superintendent of public instruction actually is, which is to manage and oversee the Department of Education. Policy is set by the Board of Education and the legislature. So she is one voice on the Board of Education, and the legislature also, and more recently, weighs in with a very heavy hand. So I think if you take those comments in that context, it's an idea, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Bob?
Yeah, I hate to see too much of religion and beliefs get too intertwined with what we do in government, just out of respect for everyone and their belief systems. If there was balance, that would be fine. But I hate to see legislatures and government officials, mandating religious instruction.
And I think that's the point of this. Creationism is a religious belief. It's not a scientific theory. A scientific theory, we had Lawrence Krauss on here. We talked about this. A scientific theory is something that you can subject to testing and you can disprove it. You can't disprove creationism. It's a belief. Evolution is a theory, and most people don't understand what a theory is. Scientists are the most modest people on earth, and theory is a word they mean. The more rough synonym for that in general discourse is proven fact, except that scientists are modest, and they know that everything that's proven can be unproven. To some extent, he said even gravity at some point is essentially there's other things involved. It just happens to fit our world on the planet. But that, again, it can be subject. Anything that's truly scientific can be disproven at some point, even if we all believe it. And
so maybe the best way to look at it is you have the scientific theories and facts that are taught in class, and you have belief systems, which are in place in churches. The two do not necessarily have to conflict, but one needs to stay in the church and the other needs to be taught in the schools.
Because the part that's religious, we have to all agree to disagree on.
Correct.
There are things we're not going to see, and there's no basis for resolving.
Correct.
In the case of science, there is. And that's experiment and testing. And laying things out to be disproven, and sometimes things get disproven. So another thing I've read recently, this whole issue of grading schools, I want to ask the question, you whether you think that makes any sense at all. I look at that, and before you even do the figures, I know the schools that are coming out as the A and the B schools. They're the schools in the wealthy districts. They've got money in the district. The parents are well-educated. I also know the schools with a high percentage of English language learners, inevitably the poorer schools, the constituency is poorer. Inevitably, they're ended up at the bottom of the heap. There was a newspaper report recently on this. There was a principal of one of these schools. He said, why is my school given the same consequence as a sex offender? It's essentially labeling. She pointed out that her English learner population grew 56% in a year. She said, next year, my special ed population is going to double. That, given that base, her grades for school performance is almost inevitably going to drop, not because the school's doing poorly, but because they have a higher they have a tougher and tougher population. So my question to you is, what's the sense of grading schools if that's a consequence? It feels to me a lot like the sign in the employee, you know, in the company lounge that says employees will be beaten until morale improves.
Well, my view is that one of the issues you raised is this English second language issue, ELL or whatever we call it, English as a second language. We're assuming here that that's not solvable, and therefore it's going to be a challenge. And there are a number of things. There's a program in Utah called Upstart. I'm a big proponent of something like that. I've been working with them, and we've been doing something small in the 300 student range in Mesa now. And basically, you take 3- and 4-year-olds, and you get them on a tablet of some kind, and they have to work 15 minutes a day on that until they go to kindergarten. So they come on.
Quick question: we know we're running out of time, but I'm not suggesting not solvable. I'm just saying that's a tougher population. A kid who comes in here doesn't speak English is not going to perform at the same level as somebody who's a native speaker.
I have some thoughts on that I'd love to share.
You bet. We'll be back, and you can be first up when we return in the think tank just after the break.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we are back with the totality of the Senate Moderate Caucus. Senator Bob Worsley from Mesa, Senator Kate Brophy McGee from Central Phoenix. And Senator Brophy McGee, I promised you the floor. We were talking education, and you had a point we want to make when the ugly finger of time constraints cut us off. So I want to give you the floor.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I was served on a school board for 20 years or 10 years, and then I've been in public service for 20 years, the entire time focused on education. We have wrestled with this issue. Parents want to know about the school that they're sending their child to. We enacted a grading system with every good intent. The state board worked very hard on it. It has rolled out, and it has been met with pretty uniform disappointment. I know I wasn't supposed to go back to talking about funding, but we instituted a massive reforms to our education system, our K-12 education system, starting in 2009. The Florida reforms would be the short name for them. We didn't fund any of that. We did not fund any of that. So going back to challenging populations of students, and I will challenge your assumptions a little bit, that the only place that you find these high achievers is in these certain types of districts and charters.
I don't think only. Disproportionate.
Disproportionate. Okay. But you can find excellence in education in all settings. And I will always pick on Phoenix Union High School District, which has one of the highest graduation rates in the state with some amazingly challenging populations. Phoenix Union is financed by DSEG, or desegregation dollars, which is a primary property tax that has been in place. The suggestion in terms of phasing out that type of tax is that it needs to be replaced with some type of poverty weight or challenge funding, because the bottom line is every student is different, and depending on their needs and their challenges, it costs more or less to educate them.
And so if you have a higher population of students with certain defined needs, you should get more funding.
You should get more funding, and you should be held accountable for how that money is spent. But some of the most amazing teaching that I have seen and witnessed firsthand is in these high-need schools. We've got to be able to hire those teachers, appropriately staff, and support those classrooms. And I can guarantee you miracles have happened, and they will happen. But the punitive aspect of that, where these easy-peasy kids go gliding through, and that school is rewarded, I think they have it backwards.
Mm-hmm. I would just add, fundamentally, I think that our K-12 funding mechanism is far too complex, and you get real strange distortions. I'll just give you an example. We have EVIT, the largest and most successful
East Valley Institute of Technology.
Yes, a VOTech school. It's an amazing campus. It looks like you're on a college campus.
It does. I've been there.
And amazing, 51 careers. And yet Mesa Public Schools, who I love and support, are incentivized to not lose their kids for half a day to go over to EVIT financially. And so they've started forming mediocre, I would say, certainly scaled back versions of EVIT on all their campuses, their high school campuses. So you have a kind of a Mickey Mouse welding program. You have a very light culinary program. Mm-hmm. And you have a first class one that you paid for with your property taxes down the street that is first class. And the counselors at Mountain View High School, where my grandkids go, are being counseled to stay on campus, stay at the culinary program, and don't go down to the culinary program down at EVIT. So these funding mechanisms cause distortions, and we need to look at that and make sure that we're doing the right thing.
We could easily make the whole show education. I had some other agenda items I wanted to go to, and this one I think you both were very involved with. At the closing of the last session, there had been a proposal to, or rather, a legislation to expand the voucher program. That was the subject of a referenda. Over 110,000 signatures were collected to put that on the ballot. And there was an effort in the waning moments of the legislature to remove that. And I think it was you, Senator Worsley, who said that would be a breach of faith with the voters.
Yes.
Which seemed to me clear cut. People are saying, let us vote on this. What on earth was going on in the caucus there?
Well, Kate and I were on different sides of this. A year ago, I agreed to step into the breach between the pro-voucher and the anti-voucher group. And I passed an amendment to, I think it was Senator Lesko's bill, to put a cap so this would not run away of 30,000 kids out of 1.2 million kids. 3%, less than 3% of could ever be voucher kids. Mm-hmm. Went to New Zealand for the summer on a sabbatical, came back, and those teachers had gone out in 120-degree weather and got signatures and put my bill on the ballot, Prop 305, to say we're going to knock that down. Mm-hmm. I think it started, actually, that started the teacher crisis.
That was the precursor to Red for Ed.
That's what lit this up.
It's what got people activated.
Exactly.
We've had two of those folks in this room. And they are folks who'd never been politically active before. They were incensed. They and every political pro in the world said, you're never going to pull this off. You know, it takes $1 million to do that. They didn't have a nickel.
And you have two senators, one that said, I'm not going to vote for your voucher bill, Bob, even with the amendment on it. And I said, I think this is the right thing to do to let people that have these kids that want to go to religious schools, they want to have these vouchers, let's give them a chance, but let's keep it small.
What I'm getting at, my inference was the whole movement to pull it off the ballot was, well, we can pull it off now, and that'll invalidate all these signatures, you know, so it won't go to vote, and then we can just put it in January.
And I thought that was
There were some strange bedfellows in that movement. The AEA joined forces with the American Federation of Children. AEA is the Arizona Education Association, the teachers union, as is sometimes known, joined forces with the pro-voucher folks wanting a clean or a simple repeal. Mm-hmm. I think their motives were different, but their effort was the same. And given how little sleep, I think 44 hours with 2 hours of sleep in between, I had to look at my text 5 times and check it after I'd rested up. They all wanted it off the ballot for different reasons.
You can see how that could be. Yeah, some people want it off the ballot because they don't like it, and that would involve repeal. Others want it off the ballot so they can shove it back in and re-vote it in. If it gets voted off by vote of the people, it, I assume, is voter protected.
And I checked with the SOSAZ leadership all through session. Where are you on this? Where are you on this? Because it is my intent to honor your wishes because you are the people that did the work and got those signatures.
And I couldn't violate that, and nor could Kate. So we stayed firm to the end.
And, you two were why this didn't pass.
It's exactly right.
The two of you were
correct.
That was my arithmetic in the beginning.
Bottom
line. 17 Republicans. If you two object together and it's otherwise a straight party line vote, it doesn't happen.
That's exactly what happened.
I want to move. There's a whole list of things I have actually that I think could be characterized as being sort of the same kind of breach of faith with the voters. Clean elections. That was passed by voters who, among other things, wanted public funding for public campaigns run by an independent commission. It's my understanding that, again, in the waning hours of the election, there was an initiative. I'm not giving my terms. It was put on the ballot by the legislature to, in effect, remove the independence of this commission. It would put it under the direction of a group that's completely controlled by the governor. He would appoint 8 out of 9 people directly. The 9th is appointed by the other 8. Isn't that of the same ilk?
This is the IRC question?
Yeah.
Okay. That was a strange vote. I was green on the board, and
so
I started.
I
got texts.
Green meaning?
I was voting for Senator Yarbrough's bill
to put
this on the ballot.
Okay.
And I had people for 24 hours before starting to get me to start to wonder if this was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just tell you behind the scenes what happened at the end, and it just kind of blew up, and Kate was supportive, is that we didn't want to have the state flooded with more money because this did help the Republicans, I think, to some extent, whoever's in power. Kind of make more political.
Well, yeah.
The IRC.
If the Democrat was ever elected governor,
it go the other way.
Has happened once in a while, not very often, but happens. It would be
the other way.
In effect, it would make it a non-independent,
right?
a clean election commission.
So there was some real movement at the very last minute to say, "Let's not deal with this. This is too. It's going toward more politicized and less independence." Mm-hmm. It's a good system. It's not perfect. It probably needs some reform, but let's not do it this year. It's already – we've already got a whole bunch of people upset about how things are going down here. Let's sit on this, and so we killed it.
Okay. I got more on my list. I'll bring them up after the break when we return for our final segment here in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we're back with Senator Kate Brophy McGee, Senator Bob Worsley. I had a laundry list. We're not going to get through most of these, but this one is not uniquely Arizona, but I think it's one of the most undemocratic thing in our Congress and most of our legislatures, and that is this sort of majority of a majority kind of provision. Let give you the simple arithmetic. There are 17 Republican senators. There's 13 Democrats. What that means is majority of a majority means that if 9 Republicans object to something and all of the other 8 Republicans plus the 13 Democrats, in other words, it's 21-9 in favor of something, the 9 is in control of it. And this is done by in most states. It's done in Congress. And it seems to me that it's inherently the most undemocratic thing you could imagine. And it just, to me, is just a lousy way to run any kind of an organization. Your comments?
Yeah, my comment is it's called the Hassert Rule.
Yeah, Hassert Rule, yeah.
And it's Congress, a really bad name because he's now been accused of horrible things. So probably want to get away from that name. But I went into Senator Yarbrough's office at least 3 times this session and said, we've never had the Hassert Rule, and please do not suddenly make it the Arizona Senate Hassert Rule body. Mm-hmm. Because I agree, 921 is a big number. And just because you have 9
It's more than two-thirds.
Yeah.
I mean, 21 would seem like it would pass the threshold for a majority.
Yeah, and it's just wrong. And we would have immigration reform in this country if Congress wasn't saddled with this awful thing called the Hassert Rule.
Yeah.
And I think bad policy, as a result, you get very polarized things happen, and you don't get good common sense compromise where it needs to be.
And I would observed that that's one of the things you don't get in city councils, and in some respects, city councils work. Well, by the way, we've been polling on this for many, many years. People rate their city councils pretty favorably and rate the legislature very low, and I think some stuff like that is underlying it. They see, it's partisan.
Yeah, I think that my school board training, which is also nonpartisan, and how I learned to legislate and govern lends itself to that bipartisan approach that Bob and I engage in. I think that majority of the majority rule is a mechanism, one of the mechanisms leadership employs to control their members. But I also look back and think that every good thing we've done, every great thing we've done since my tenure with the legislature, with the exception of the supermajority vote on Prop 301, has been with a different majority, a bipartisan majority, whether you talk about Medicaid restoration and expansion, and whether you talk about kids care. We did have to go through leadership in the House and the Senate to get there, but we got there. And most recently on Senator Worsley's bill, VLT bill, that I think did not have 9 Republican votes on it, but it had enough votes to pass, and it was brought to the floor following the regular rules of order. And I really give credit to Bob for his leadership in that regard.
Well, and I'm just going to read a sentence here from John McCain's Restless Wave, the new book that's coming out. I'm a champion of compromise in the governance of a country of 325 million opinionated, quarrelsome, vociferous souls. There is no other way to govern an open society, or more precisely to govern it effectively. Principled compromises aren't unicorns. Muddling through, hashing out policy agreements that thrill no one but are acceptable to most is a useful achievement in a republic. That's the way we govern.
Well, but not everybody says compromise in a lot of circles is a dirty word. It means you're not ideologically pure.
But it's how we get things done. And taking that pragmatic approach, giving minority leadership as much input into a solution or a compromise as majority leadership to get the votes. I look at every good thing we've done. Another example this year is the opioid crisis, the special session, which was virtually
unanimous.
That's how you get good things done for the people of Arizona. And it means that people on the far right and the far left sometimes have to hold their noses and vote.
And there are few issues where the public is so vehemently in favor of.
Correct.
As
correct.
Bipartisan solutions.
The hyperpartisanship that we are experiencing at the national and the state level, I think, is wearing on the American people and the citizens of Arizona more than anything, which it's just hard. It's very hard. And it's very hard to go down there and legislate. There are fewer and fewer of us. Bob being one, I'm one, Frank Pratt is one in the Senate. There are fewer of us. We actually need more of us.
Yeah, we were 7 when I started 6 years ago.
And the process seems to wane you out. It's called the primary process, right? You don't lose general elections, you lose in the primary by the more extreme candidate.
Bob does. I'm in that's his risk, is the primary. I'm in a moderate swing district. But there are only about 3 or 4 moderate or swing districts out of 30 in the state. So my races are always different, and it usually comes down to a barn burner general.
Yeah, I did a count of that. You've got that almost exactly right. I've got a total of districts where there are one party controls by less than 5%, 2 out of 30.
Yes.
And then there's a couple that are,
a little closer, but not very.
One other thing on my kind of list of gripes here, local preemption in the city of Tempe. I'm a resident of Tempe. The issue of dark money was put to the public vote, and a restriction on dark money was undisclosed campaign contributions got 91% of the vote. I haven't seen 91% of the vote for anything in many, many years. 91% of the vote. And the legislature passed a prohibition on basically preempting the right of the city to do that.
Well, a couple of thoughts on that. But first, I think the place that there is, the, where preemption makes sense is for that issue is at the state and at the federal level, that the legislation or the rules or the law should be uniform for a state and then at the federal mm-hmm. level. So if you want to address the problem, it is far better to address it at the state level in this case, whereas you have one jurisdiction that's operating this way and mm-hmm. another jurisdiction that is operating that way. The other point I would make is if you do your research, it actually goes back the disclosure on dark money and the efforts to keep that information closed goes back to efforts to publish those who were contributing to the NAACP. Because the idea would be that once those names were published, those individuals would be subject to public scorn, and humiliation, and possibly worse. So it's a goose gander. It's flipped, and we've brought it up to more current times. But the fact of the matter is both sides find it egregious. This was not the level of government at which to legislate.
Wow. There's... of being cut off. We should have you guys back. It was a wonderful discussion, and I had an agenda here, and we've hardly scratched the surface.
Well, we have strong opinions.
Well, good. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Senator Kate Brophy McGee, Senator Bob Worsley, instructive.
Mike.
You can find this and other shows archived at ktar.com, and the older ones in particular are very easily accessible on my site, mikeoneal.org. We will be back next week in the Think Tank, another provocative show. Thank you very much.